This is the State of Things. I'm Frank Stacio. Mother's Day just around the corner, and while many people are scrambling to put a card in the mail or finalize plans for taking mom out for a nice meal, a group of local writers is encouraging us to press the pause button on all this frenzy. Instead, they say we should take a moment to celebrate the diverse experiences of motherhood through listening. Listen to Your Mother started in Wisconsin in 2010 by a blogger who wanted to give a microphone to mothers in her community. 5 years later, there are shows in 39 cities around the country. 13 women in the Triangle will share their stories about motherhood on stage tonight and tomorrow, 7:30 at William Peace University's Keenan Auditorium. Their experiences range from coping with maternal guilt to caring for their own aging mothers. Three of the writers and performers join me in the studio today for a preview. Joining me first is Beth Messer-Smith. She's a North Carolina campaign director for MomsRising.org. Beth, welcome to State of Things. Good to have you here.
Thanks for having us.
Tell us a little bit about your experience, first of all, with Listen to Your Mother and how you first sort of came to be a member and find out about this.
Sure. Well, for the last 2 years, I have been an audience member. I have been in the audience listening and cheering and crying along with these amazing women and never really thought about sending in my own piece. But right before the deadline, several friends started gently bullying me via text and at pickup time saying, you know, you really need to apply. You have a story. You need to write it. Take 30 minutes. And I did, and I'm so glad that I did because it's been a beautiful thing.
Well, tell us about that story.
My story starts at my entrance into motherhood. It was 10 years ago now, 10 years ago this month, and I'm a very type A person, and I wanted to make sure that I knew everything about motherhood and I would be prepared, but my son was born 2.5 months early. I wasn't prepared for that at all, and so my story is about his early arrival and how that changed me.
Will you read a section for us?
Sure, I would love to. When he was born at 31 weeks and 1 day, it was 15 hours before I got to see or touch him. They rolled me in to meet him and placed his tiny 2-pound body in my arms, and the fierceness of what I felt for him literally took my breath away. What I never knew before having a premature baby is that my reality of sitting by his incubator was a dream for most NICU parents. I watched every day as right around dinner time, the nursery would flood with families rushing in after work. Even for those lucky enough to have paid maternity or paternity leave, it was a decision between taking it while their babies were in the NICU or once they came home. While my son fought and grew over his 2 months in the hospital, I sat and grew in my own way. I settled in with some light reading on maternity leave, infant mortality, child care, and health care access. Somehow, I'd never realized exactly how bad these policies are and the price that families pay as a result. America talks a good game about valuing motherhood and families in this country, but when the rubber hits the road, the U.S. doesn't come close to having policies that reflect that sentiment.
That is Beth Messer-Smith. She's one of the participants in the Triangle's Listen to Your Mother event that takes place tonight and tomorrow, 7:30 at William Peace University's Keenan Auditorium. It's a nice piece, and it allowed you to reflect, I think, on first of all, on the endless surprise that is motherhood, right? These things
yes.
that no matter how much you prepare, the kids have a way of making your life different. But then also reflect on, yeah, the fact that there are policies, that there are people who are not as privileged as you.
Absolutely. So, I was lucky.
Well, and I wonder about all of these reflections, too. Again, you have a personality. There's a kind of way that you sort of operate in the world. And mm-hmm. then as a mother, as someone who brings in a family, it forces you in some ways. I mean, we think about motherhood or parenthood mm-hmm. in general as the thing that takes away all of our time. But it's interesting that for you it was and it gave you the chance to reflect.
It did. I mean, I thought I knew a lot about the way the world worked, but I learned a lot along the way.
Which means you had to be open to all of those little surprises and mysteries.
Children do that to you, for sure.
those kids did. Well, listen, we're going to be joined by another mother now and another participant, Glenna Hurlburt. And Glenna is also with us on the State of Things and one of the participants. Welcome. It's good to have you here.
Thank you.
Your piece comes out of a bigger work of a memoir that you started a number of years ago. So first tell us about that.
It was clear that mother was dying back in 2001, and I knew I was the last repository of some of her family stories. And she was so awe-inspiring to me, I didn't want her to be forgotten either. So I started writing about her. And since then, I've accumulated many chapters about many members of the family.
You had a brother, but you lost him, so you were...
Lost him young, yes. He died 10 years before mother did.
And I'm going to ask you to read for us, but maybe you should describe your mother and tell us, you know, a little bit more about her before we hear you read.
She was born in 1903 on a family farm in probably maybe the poorest county in southern Missouri, and knew that she, when she, her father died when she was 15, and she knew she had to get herself educated and her younger sister educated. They were the last children at home, had a very dependent mother, and she was so determined and persevered, got them off the farm, got them educated in good teaching positions, and they both became professional teachers and self-sustaining women. And this was back in the 1920s. So she was a little bit ahead of her time, perhaps. And to me, that's always been awe-inspiring.
And she stayed that way, and she stayed determined almost to the very end of her life.
She did. She was 98 and still determined when she died.
Can I ask you to read for us?
Surely. It is lunchtime when I arrive today. I forget how early they serve meals. I'm self-conscious as I walk across the dining room. Many eyes are upon me in speculation. Aides are slowly serving the independent eaters first. I look for Mother. She's not at her usual table. Then I spy her in the horseshoe of those patients who need help to eat. Mother sits there, detached from the clatter, in the line with six other residents. My lovely mother sands her chestnut curls and swinging ear bobs, is gray and diminished. In her washed-out denim robes, she looks like a weary child caught in a heavy wheelchair. She's lost more weight recently, and her hair hangs, white and lank. Her costume jewelry is in her bedside table for the duration. I pull up a chair to sit beside Mother. She acknowledges me with a smile, but no recognition. Always mannerly, I think, even when there is little else left.
That's Glenna Hurlburt. She is one of the participants in the Triangles Listen to Your Mother event. It takes place tonight and tomorrow at William Peace University. Glenna, you are the oldest participant in this group and the only one who wrote about your own mother. Tell us about that decision.
Well, I was a little bit uneasy when I met these other gals, and wondering what I was doing in this company. But, you know, we're all women, which requires such flexibility and such strength and such creative thinking to meet the demands of families and with careers and all that goes on in the world today. So we, I think, formed a bond of great mutual respect almost immediately, even though our ages are different and our experiences have been somewhat different.
No, there's certainly a thread between your experience and Beth to the extent that you are upended, in a sense, in the way you react to your mother. She had always been in charge, and now suddenly the roles are reversed very quickly and very suddenly.
That's true. She was my rock and my harbor all my life. I was so fortunate to have her until she was 98. And one of the things she loved about it was that we were senior citizens together before she died.
Did she ever make you feel old?
No, I always...
God bless her.
No. I always felt youngster, like a youngster.
We're joined now by our last Listen to Your Mother participant on this show. Anyway, Mary Davila, she's an Episcopal priest who used to work at Christ Church in Raleigh. Mary, welcome to State Things. Good
Thank
to have you,
you
here.
Thank you for having us.
So tell us a bit about your decision to write and why you decided to participate.
So, like Beth, I had been an audience member for 2 years and was so moved by the stories that I heard and encouraged by the stories that I heard that I sat down to write my own. But really and truly, I wrote it because it was cathartic for me to do so. And I'm delighted that I was chosen to be part of the cast, but I'm just grateful for the opportunity for my own sake to put my thoughts into writing.
So tell us a bit about your story.
So the story that I share is the story of my husband and I having the opportunity to meet our daughter's mother. We adopted a little girl from Ethiopia in 2010 and had the great fortune of spending about 30 minutes with our daughter's mother. So that's what my story is about, that meeting.
Right. And actually, it came about, I mean, at a certain point, first of all, you had permission, which is interesting, that you, under Ethiopian law, you were able to do that. At what point did your daughter become interested in this, or did she?
You know, we have always told her that she is adopted, and we have always shown her pictures. Even when she was a baby, we showed her pictures of her mother and of her with her mother and of us with her mother. So there has never been a time when she has not known who her mother is.
Will you read for us?
Absolutely. I remember the big table in the conference room of our adoption agency's office and how tiny she was sitting at it. We joined her at the table, and for a long, long time, no one said a word. Tears. Ugly, snotty heaves and heaps of tears. Finally, I said, "Thank you." And the translator spoke to her in Amharic. She replied, and the translator spoke to us in English. She says, "Thank you." She told us many things about her family and her life, and she shared her hopes and dreams for her daughter. Dreams of health, education, and love. Dreams any mother has for her child. We promised to do our very best to make her dreams come true. And we promised to tell our daughter how much she is loved by her Ethiopian mother. We don't call her our daughter's birth mother, because she did far more than birth her. Hers was the voice that our daughter heard sing to her for 9 months in the womb. Hers was the breast that nursed her. Hers were the hands that changed her diapers. Hers was the heart that longed to raise her, but simply couldn't. She is her Ethiopia mom. She is far more to us than the words birth mother convey.
That's Mary Davila. She's one of the participants in the Triangle's Listen to Your Mother event tomorrow and tonight and tomorrow, in fact, at 7:30 at William Peace University. There's information at our website, stateofthings.org. Mary, your daughter is now five. Talked to her? I mean, you said you've been very open. Did you talk about that particular encounter?
Yes. Yes. Of course, she has no memory of that meeting. But when we show her pictures, we tell her what we talked about, and we tell her what one said to the other.
You know, we think about Mother's Day as the celebration, time to take out mom, thank her for all those wonderful things and putting up with us, et cetera. But you, especially having been in the pulpit often on Mother's Day, have found that it can be difficult to talk about Mother's Day.
It's a sensitive day, and you know, it's not a religious holiday. It's a secular holiday, and yet it garners the third highest attendance of any Sunday of the year behind Christmas and Easter. And people come expecting to hear something about mothers and motherhood, but sometimes they come with fear and trepidation about what's going to be said. Maybe they didn't have the mother who they long to have, or maybe they're struggling to conceive a child, and there's just a lot of angst around that day for some people. And it's helpful to note that the history of Mother's Day is that it was the brainchild of a woman named Julia Ward Howe in 1870. She wrote the Mother's Day Proclamation, and she had a vision of bringing together mothers of sons who were fighting for the North and fighting for the South in the Civil War. And she believed that if she could bring women together, if she could bring moms together, then the one thing that they could agree on was they wanted their sons home and they wanted peace. And Mother's Day, as it's currently celebrated, is a far cry from that. And yet those are its roots. And that's what we as moms want more than anything, to raise our children in a just and peaceful society.
I wonder what this means to you. You know, Mary talked about how cathartic an experience it is. Beth, what about for you just participating in this event?
It's such a beautiful and empowering experience. Last night we had our last rehearsal, and as I looked across the stage at the women sitting next to me, awe, humbled. There's so many feelings, but mostly just trusted that these women would share this thing that's very vulnerable, but so powerful with me, but with this broader audience, because, you know, motherhood, you're doing it every single day, but you're doing it on your own in a lot of ways. And so having this connection to the broader universal motherhood is beautiful.
Glenna, how about you? What's it meant for you to participate in this?
Well, I was delighted, first of all, to that they would trust us with their stories. Some of these women have experiences that I have not had, but we're all so much the same, really. Life has required us to be determined and persevere and have creative thinking when it comes to making our families, remaking our families. And it's just a lovely bond, I think, of womanhood.
Beth, I guess it also gives us an opportunity when we talk about reflection and a time to reflect, to think about how motherhood and how womanhood, particularly in this country, has changed since 1870 when the first proclamation was made. Have you had thoughts about that?
I do. I was actually sitting here listening to Mary thinking, I think it's changed in a lot of ways, but in a lot of ways it hasn't. I mean, the idea that Mother's Day was originally an organizing tactic. You know, it was about women seeing the need for change in their communities and working together to change it. And I think that that's still going on, you know, at the national level and in local communities all over the country. And I think that, you know, that women, there may be more women in the workplace. Women may be have different rights than we had back in the 1800s. But there are lots of fundamental things that are still the same, which is that, you know, women fight for our families, and we work day in and day out, even when we have all these other things to do, to build a better society for our kids. Someone said this morning that we plant trees that we will never sit under, and I think that that's really true.
Interesting organizing tactic, too, because it begins with right at your strength. So it begins with the things that we're best at and talks about the things that we can all agree on.
Absolutely.
Fascinating technique and wonderful stories. And I know there are many, many more tonight and tomorrow. So thank you for representing at least some of them on this show.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Can I say one last thing?
Sure.
We are really excited because we believe in stories. And our partner this year is Book Harvest. And we're hoping that everybody that comes out to the shows brings some books to donate to kids in need in our communities.
Thank you for saying that. Beth Messersmith, Glenna Hurlburt, and Mary Davila are three of the 13 performers in the Triangle's Listen to Your Mother show on stage tonight and tomorrow, William Peace University's Keenan Auditorium. Bring a book if you can. A portion of the ticket sales of the event will also go to Book Harvest. It's a nonprofit that gives books to all at-risk children. They'll be collecting used books at the event tonight. And as I say, a portion of the ticket sales go to that organization. You can find out more at our website, stateofthings.org. Our program is produced by Laura Lee, Anita Rao, Hadi Mawagdi, and Will Michaels. Robin Copley is our technical director, Jess Clark, our intern. Brent Wolf is WUNC's news director. North Carolina Public Radio is a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.